You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, what is OCD and how serious is it? I am your host, Noah Larracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. So we're back with season two of the podcast. Congratulations.
Yay.
And today we're going to talk about what I think is probably your favorite topic.
It is.
OCD.
Obsessive compulsive disorder.
So you are definitely one of the experts in the country about OCD. So let's get right to it. Let's start very simply. What, in your words, is OCD?
OCD, there are two parts to it. Obsessions and compulsions, just as the name describes. Now, obsessions are unwanted, intrusive thoughts, images, sensations that repeatedly appear in your mind against your will. And it occurs like a nightmare that keeps replaying as a broken record. On the other hand, compulsions are things that we do, things that we perform, whether behaviorally or mentally, to escape from the discomfort that the obsessions produce. So, for example, if you are someone who feels afraid of illnesses and germs and so forth, and you're constantly vigilant, you're constantly concerned about what particles in your environment are contaminated, that is going to create a lot of discomfort, and naturally so. Whenever we experience a threat, we automatically trigger the body's autonomic fight-or-flight response. Now, because the fight-or-flight response is perceived as uncomfortable and anxiety and fear-provoking, what the person generally does is want to escape from it. And therefore, compulsions serve that purpose, to help us escape from the discomfort triggered from obsessions.
So OCD is an anxiety disorder.
OCD is an anxiety disorder. According to the DSM-5, it's got its own category, though. So it's not under the umbrella of anxiety disorders per se. However, it is a part of anxiety disorders.
So real quick then, let's give some examples of what some obsessions might be so people can recognize them.
So some of the very classic obsessions are fear of harm to yourself or other people. So for example, if you're constantly afraid that you might have hurt somebody, that you might have run somebody over while you're driving, kids have a lot of fears in terms of fearing that they will push someone down the stairs or that they might stab somebody. Or a criminal would come and kidnap them or come and burglarize their home. So fear of harm to self or others is one category. Another classic category is contamination. These are people who are hypervigilant about the contaminants in their world for fear of being ill, being sick, for getting a disease. Now, some people with an obsession of contamination could also just not like the feeling of being contaminated. So they would not like feeling sticky residue on their fingers or their skin. Now, contamination can also involve other areas, not just the typical germ or illness. We could also have emotional contaminations. So this is something like, if I see someone who has a certain characteristic, I don't want that characteristic to contaminate me, my trait. So that is also a form of contamination. Some other common obsessions are scrupulosity, religiosity, morality. These are people who are really concerned with right and wrong, not offending their religion, not being scrupulous. And that can be pretty debilitating too. And it can be pretty confusing because where's that fine line in terms of, well, is this normal or is this an obsession. Another common obsession is counting and tapping. So counting to specific numbers, these might be people who have good, bad numbers or even good, bad colors, and they would count or they would do things, perform actions till they reach that good number. And as you can tell, there are just so many. Let me just go through a few more, though, before we jump into something else. There are also repeating obsessions. So these are people who need to feel just right. And they have a desire, and there's no specificity in terms of what feels right. It's just a feeling. So they would do things repeatedly until it feels just right. And I think I covered some of the most common obsessions.
So it would be fair to say that these obsessions are always negative, right? You never had an obsession about something good.
Well, for kids, they might feel like, well, this is something that I need. This is something that protects me. So the obsession is necessary. However, that's just OCD playing tricks on your mind. An obsession is never necessary, especially when it's repeating constantly in your mind, and it makes you feel shame, it makes you feel guilt, it makes you feel anxious, and it can be debilitating. That is never a good thing.
Let's try to get some examples of compulsions.
Okay, well, you have your classic checkers. Checkers for people who have fears of harm to themselves, harm to other people, harm to property, so they're constantly checking. You have your washers. These are the compulsions for the triggers of contamination fears. You have the counters, and people who count because they have specific good or bad numbers, or they need to perform things to a certain number of time. And you have people who constantly seek reassurance. So they will ask the same question, whether something is okay or something is not going to harm them, a million different times. Oh, and there are people who do a lot of prayers. So they would pray. These are people who have the religiosity, the scrupulosity obsessions, and they would pray. And it doesn't have to be a prayer that we're all familiar with that's specific to a certain religion. It could be any word or any phrase that they use, which is their kind of prayers. So those are just some of the more common compulsions.
So what is the relationship between the obsessions and the compulsions?
The way that OCD works is that obsessions intrusively, not through your own voluntary response, okay? So involuntarily comes into your mind and it's felt. So for example, if I have a fear of being harmed, I am constantly searching my surrounding and I'm constantly, maybe to even a paranoid degree, fearful that there's someone or something that can harm me. And because I'm constantly on the lookout, I'm constantly perceiving danger. I'm looking out for threats. And we all know how that fight or flight response works, right? We talked about it in one of the initial episodes that we've done. So if you're constantly perceiving threat, you're constantly surveilling your environment for threat, well, that is going to trigger your body's autonomic fight or flight response, which creates discomfort. Now, we perceive that bodily fight or flight response as anxiety. And nobody likes to endure anxiety. So we feel the need to do something about it, to get rid of the anxiety. And that's where the compulsion comes in. The compulsions serve to escape, remove, avoid from that physiological discomfort that your body feels that's triggered from the obsession. And of course, when we are successful, when the compulsions are successful at reducing or even eliminating the bodily discomfort, the anxiety, we gain relief. Ah, feels better. The problem with that is that the relief is temporary. It's never long term, because before you know it, the next obsession will come back in. And it comes back in and it keeps repeating because it's involuntary. You have no control over it. So those obsessions will continue to repeat itself, just like a nightmare that you can't wake up from. So you'll continue to experience the discomfort. And because you continue to experience the discomfort, you'll want to keep up the compulsions to gain that relief. And before you know it, a web has built where the bond between the obsession and the compulsion gets stronger and stronger to the point where it is very difficult to break.
So OCD really is a very nasty and very serious thing to have to deal with, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I think what a lot of people don't understand is how debilitating it can be, how entrenching it can be to a person's life, how it can completely deteriorate a person's life, a person's daily activities, where this person is no longer able to function. This person is no longer able to go to school or go to work. This person isn't even able for self-care because this person is now in avoidance mode. So anything can be triggering and the environment becomes dangerous. And therefore, the person isn't able to function at all.
So it takes over their entire life at times, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And I know a lot of people minimizes the severity of OCD because what they get their information from is the media. And we have a lot of movies that depict OCD in a very light, comical, funny way. However, what the audience sees is just the external behavioral presentation of the compulsions. They see the person going back and forth, or repeating themselves, or acting in these quirky ways, having to wash, and it seems funny on the outside. However, what the audience doesn't see are the struggles, the internal mental images, the nightmare that the person has to keep reliving. I mean, Noah, if you kept replaying a nightmare in your head over and over again, how would you be able to function? How would you feel?
I would feel awful and I would not be able to function very well.
Would you be able to hear a person lecture to you?
Doubtful.
Would you be able to read a book?
Also doubtful.
Exactly, right? Because your mind will be constantly focused on the threat, on the potential dangers in your world, and therefore you wouldn't be able to focus in class or pay attention to somebody speak. And the problem also, aside from just society having a lack of understanding of OCD and its severity and minimizing its effects, the thing about OCD is that it can be so complicated and hard to recognize that there are many people with OCD who actually get misdiagnosed. In fact, a couple of research indicates that it takes someone a good 7 years to reach appropriate diagnosis for OCD and to even be directed in the right treatment.
Well, why is that? What do they miss about OCD and what do they misdiagnose it as?
Well, a lot of times people with OCD can appear as someone with just a phobia. Right? What's the difference between OCD and a phobia? Well, a phobia is someone who just has a fear of, let's say, blood or needles or spiders. And therefore, that person will go all out to avoid that specific trigger. However, a person with OCD will do a lot more complex things than just avoidance. Yes, avoidance is one compulsion. However, the person who is afraid of blood and needles might actually go around and constantly be on the lookout to check if they've touched blood, if there are any needles or sharp objects around them. So they aren't just avoiding the needle as a person with a phobia might be doing. A person with OCD would be actively on the lookout, actively checking to make sure there are no needles or they haven't touched anyone with any blood, or they might even inspect a person to see whether that person is bleeding somewhere before they even interact with them. That person might not shake hands with anyone because who knows, you might have touched blood or you might be bleeding on your fingers and therefore I'm not even going to touch you. So as you can tell, it starts creeping into many areas of your life, and it doesn't just involve avoidance. So phobias is a common misdiagnosis. Another common misdiagnosis, especially in children, is ADHD. So kids with inattentiveness or hyperactive behaviors. Now, if you can imagine, if you have a nightmare, if you have images of a nightmare that is replaying in your mind, would you be able to pay attention to your teacher speaking?
It would be very difficult.
It would be very difficult, right? However, your teacher has absolutely no idea what's going on in your head. All your teacher can see is that you're not paying attention. And many people are quick to label that as inattentiveness in ADHD. Or let's say because you have fears of doing things to the wrong number, you will have to keep repeating yourself to a specific number. Let's say the number is lucky 7, and you have to get your pencil in and out of your pencil box, if people still use pencils these days, to 7 times. Or you would have to keep reading a certain sentence 7 times. You have to keep doing things to 7 times. Would you appear hyperactive to an outside observer?
You would appear very, very hyperactive if you were doing things 7 times.
Yes, with everything, right? Whether it's getting up and down from your seat or putting your clothes on or writing something. You write something wrong, you have to erase it and rewrite 7 times. You would appear as a very hyperactive child. And the outside observer, such as a teacher, would automatically assume that is hyperactive behaviors, such as that in ADHD. So ADHD is a very common misdiagnosis for kids with OCD because, again, all people see are the external behaviors. They can't really see what goes on in your mind, the nightmare that keeps replaying in your mind. Now, another class of mental disorders that can sometimes get confused with OCD are delusional and psychotic disorders. For example, if I'm afraid to be harmed, and I'm constantly on the lookout for harm, well, I might be so suspicious of any little thing and any little person that could potentially be dangerous to me, that could potentially be a threat to my well-being, that it could border the line of delusional or psychotic disorders. And it's a shame when a kid can be misdiagnosed with delusional or psychotic disorder and be placed on all sorts of antipsychotics when that medication is not what the kid needs, because the kid actually has obsessive compulsive disorder. So as you can see, there are many ramifications that can occur from a person not being diagnosed appropriately with OCD.
It sounds like you're saying this is no mere personality quirk. This is a very serious, debilitating illness that needs to be addressed with treatment.
Absolutely. And the problem is that consumers aren't aware that there is actually very effective treatment. The evidence-based treatment for OCD is exposure and response prevention, which is a type of cognitive behavior therapy. We discussed a little bit about that before. And unfortunately, when I have patients coming through our doors at the Renewed Freedom Center and they've been in therapy, talk therapy, for 10, 20 years and they're still suffering from OCD, that's heartbreaking to see. That really is, because patients at our program complete treatment within a few months to within a year, because CBT, specifically exposure and response prevention therapy, is a very proactive treatment. It's not your typical talk therapy. You're not there just talking about your history and what your parents did to you and what your friends did to you and how you were bullied. No, you are taking a proactive measure to learn specific tools to confront and decrease the anxiety that you experience.
We're definitely going to get into treatment in the next episode. But in the meantime, what causes OCD? In other words, is there some incident from your childhood or some specific thing that happens to you that can lead to these obsessive thoughts?
Well, from the research that we have so far, we know that OCD is caused by a combination of nature and nurture. So again, we go back to that debate. So people with OCD have a genetic vulnerability. So you're predisposed with the genes for obsessive compulsive disorder. However, just because you have the genetic vulnerability does not necessarily mean that you will actually have OCD. There are also environmental factors at play. Environmental factors could be something learned. So for example, you observe a certain behavior or you observe a fear from somebody and you integrate that into your learning and who you are. It can also be a traumatic event. So if you've witnessed, observed, or even personally experienced some harm to you or a loved one, that can trigger OCD as well. It could be something like infections, such as strep infections. So we definitely know that today that there are certain infections that a person can have that crosses the blood-brain barrier and affect that part of your brain that is triggered from OCD, that is affected by OCD. So there are many environmental factors that can come into play. What is great is that USC, the University of Southern California, is doing one of the first and most important research on genetics and OCD. And this is a NIMH-funded research study, and the goal is to collect 5,000 research subjects who have OCD and to test their blood and to really pinpoint what are the genes that are affected for people with OCD. And hopefully that will help us understand OCD better and provide more effective treatment. So if there's anyone out there who are suffering from OCD and who would like to volunteer for this research to help find more specific treatment, I would highly suggest contacting Dr. Barbara Van Noppen over at the University of Southern California.
And we'll post that information. Lastly, though, what is the prevalence of OCD?
Well, it's actually quite common, scary common. We know that for adults, there are at least, and I stress at least, 1 in 200 adults between the ages of 18 and up that has OCD. For children, we know that it's at least 1 in 200 children who are suffering from OCD. And these numbers are most likely underestimates of the true number of people who suffer from OCD because it takes a lot of time to do prevalence studies. By the time we get statistics from each study, we're already a couple of decades behind. So these are numbers that we've had for a couple of decades now. And I'm sure as people become more informed about OCD and patients are diagnosed appropriately and accurately with OCD, we'll see that number rise.
Well, I'm excited to really get into this over the next couple of weeks and learn about OCD and help educate our audience.
Yes, I agree.
Thank you for listening to the Stressless Life Podcast. You can join the discussion and find more information at thestresslesslifepodcast.com. Please write to us with questions and comments at podcast@thestresslesslife.com. Until next time, stay stressless.